From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!'s Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency, the Battle for New York.
That's why I commend to my country the re-election of President Bush and the...
The Republican National Convention officially kicks off. What do John McCain and John Kerry have in common? A vicious Bush campaign attack on their war records.
4 years ago, John McCain was the target of one of the most vicious attacks in modern political history by the allies of George Bush. And here he was last night on stage praising the man who really destroyed and tried to destroy his legacy and damage his family. It was like two parallel universes.
As the Republicans meet inside the heavily fortified Madison Square Garden, protests continue with two large unpermitted marches organized by the poor and disenfranchised.
Still we rise. You can't hold us down. You can't hold us down. You take everything away from us because you can't hold us down. Because this is the poor people's march. You know, and we represent New York City.
We are the people too.
And as Republican women organize under the banner W is for Women, we'll speak with Laura Flanders, author of Bush Women and The W Effect, Bush's War on Women.
W stands for women, say the Bush women, but look at Bush's record, and W stands for wealth, war, whopper, wrong, and yesterday it stood for Waldorf.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency, the Battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman. The Republican National Convention opened last night in New York at Madison Square Garden, just miles from Ground Zero. Former New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani and Senator John McCain, others, called for President Bush's reelection and praised his handling of the September 11th attacks and the war on terror. The theme of the evening, courage of a nation. Earlier in the day, the Republicans approved its new party platform with little debate. The New York Times reports for the first time the platform puts the party firmly on record against legalized abortion, gay marriage, and other forms of legal recognition for same-sex couples. The gay rights group Human Rights Campaign called the platform one of the, quote, most discriminatory platforms in modern history. On economic issues, the platform calls for the privatization of Social Security and for making President Bush's tax cuts permanent. Democrats have accused the Republicans of trying to mask the conservative nature of the party's platform by showcasing speakers who appeal to moderate voters, such as Arnold Schwarzenegger tonight. He is the keynote speaker. The Financial Times reports that primetime speaking spots have not been granted to Tom DeLay, Rick Santorum, Dennis Hastert, or Dr. Bill Frist, the quartet who set the tone and tactics for much of the party's agenda in Congress. A spokesperson for John Kerry said of the platform, quote, it's the truth behind the facade of their convention. It reflects the divisiveness and extreme policies of the last 4 years, with the public speakers paint a very different picture. While speakers last night repeatedly praised how President Bush has waged the so-called war on terror, the president has for the first time cited doubts if the war on terror is winnable. Matt Lauer of NBC asked him recently, quote, can we win? President Bush replied, quote, I don't think you can win it, but I think you can create conditions so that those who use terror as a tool are less acceptable in parts of the world. In the streets of New York, protests are continuing today for a fifth day in a row. The A31 Coalition has called for a day of direct action against the Republican National Convention. Meanwhile, the War Resisters League, Voices in the Wilderness, and other activist groups are planning to stage a die-in in front of Madison Square Garden tonight. On Monday, more than 15,000 marched in a protest organized by the Still We Rise Coalition. Thousands also rallied in the Poor People's March for Economic Human Rights. Police arrested about 20 protesters in demonstrations yesterday, bringing the total arrest to around 600 over the past 5 days. The National Lawyers Guild yesterday accused the city of preventing jailed protesters from seeing lawyers, and they charged the arrested protesters are being held in poor conditions. In news from Iraq, Shia Cleric has ordered his militia to suspend attacks across Iraq. Sadr's armed movement has led much of the Shiite resistance against the U.S. occupation. In addition, Sadr called for the U.S. to pull the troops out of all city centers in Iraq. Aides to Sadr said the cleric would soon announce his entrance into politics. In Afghanistan, U.S. warplanes have reportedly bombed a village in eastern Afghanistan, killing at least 6 people and destroying 8 houses. The attack came after rockets were fired on a nearby security post. In Israel, Prime Minister General Ariel Sharon has presented a new timetable to accelerate the withdrawal of troops and settlers from the Gaza Strip. Sharon vowed to push ahead with the plan despite wide opposition from his own party. And the Washington Post reports that the FBI has interviewed senior Pentagon officials, including Douglas Feith, in connection with an investigation into a Pentagon analyst who's suspected of spying for Israel. The analyst, Larry Franklin, is suspected of sharing classified documents on U.S. policy towards Iran with the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, known as AIPAC, which then turned the documents over to Israel. The Post also reports that law enforcement agents are close to filing charges and that Franklin may soon be arrested.
Down a dangerous road, I have come to where I'm standing with a heavy heart and my hat clutched in my hand. Such a foolish man. God ain't known no greater sinner. I have come in search of Jesus, hoping he will understand. If I give my soul, will he clean these clothes I'm wearing? If I give my soul, will he put new boots on my feet? If I bow my head and beg God for his forgiveness, will he breathe new life within me and bring her back to me? I had a woman once. She was kind and she was gentle. Had a child by me who grew up to be a man. I had a steady job till I started into drinking. Then I started making music, traveling with the devil's band. Oh, the years went by like a mighty rush of egos. Our dreams and plans were all scattered in the wind. And it's a lonesome life when you lose the ones you live for. If I make my peace,
if I give my soul, Johnny Cash. And today at Sotheby's, 4 o'clock, call for a man in black block protest of the Republican celebration of Johnny Cash's life. That's at Sotheby's today at 4 in New York. Yes, this is Democracy Now!, Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency, the Battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman. The Republican Party kicked off its national convention last night at Madison Square Garden, a day after hundreds of thousands of protesters took to the streets of New York in the largest demonstration ever at a political convention. Outside, an unprecedented show of police force patrolled the streets and the area around Madison Square Garden, heavily fortified with barriers and checkpoints. The numerous speeches and events of the day left little doubt about why the GOP decided to hold its first convention in New York, meeting less than 3 miles from Ground Zero. Republicans repeatedly invoke the memory of September 11th, which killed the attacks, killed some 3,000 Americans and defended President Bush's term in office and his decision to invade and occupy Iraq. With the major broadcast networks providing limited coverage, convention organizers staged the evening as their own TV show, complete with roving reporters interviewing upbeat delegates who praised the president and hailed the service of U.S. troops abroad. The stars of the night, Arizona Senator John McCain and New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani. Giuliani, along with most of the Republicans, took swipes at John Kerry, accusing of being soft on terror and of taking both sides of issues. By contrast, McCain, who is a friend of his fellow Senator John Kerry and a fellow Vietnam War veteran, refused to criticize Kerry and said he's, quote, fortunate to call many Democrats his friends. 4 years ago, McCain and Bush were bitter rivals in the race for the 2000 Republican presidential nomination. Today, John McCain has emerged as one of President Bush's most influential supporters. He took the stage last night to endorse President Bush's renomination.
However just the cause, we should mourn for all that is lost when war claims its wages from us. But there is no avoiding this war. We tried that, and our reluctance cost us dearly. This war has many components. We can't make victory on the battlefield harder to achieve so that our diplomacy is easier to conduct. This is not just an expression of strength. It is a measure of our wisdom. That's why I commend to my country the re-election of President Bush and the steady, experienced, public-spirited man who serves as our Vice President, Dick Cheney. Four years ago in Philadelphia, I spoke of my confidence that President Bush would accept the responsibilities that come with America's distinction as the world's only superpower. I promised he would not let America retreat behind empty threats, false promises, and uncertain diplomacy, that he would confidently defend our interests and values wherever they are threatened. I knew my confidence was well placed. When I watched him stand on the rubble of the World Trade Center with his arm around a hero of September 11th, and in our moment of mourning and anger, strengthen our unity and our resolve by promising to right this terrible wrong and to stand up and fight for the values we hold dear. He promised our enemies would soon hear from us, and so they did. So they did.
Arizona Senator John McCain speaking last night, the opening night of the Republican National Convention. McCain's support for President Bush may be surprising for many who remember the bitter race between the two men 4 years ago in the Republican primaries. A smear campaign directed against McCain during the 2000 South Carolina primary is believed by many to have been directed by Bush's senior political advisor, Karl Rove. Rove is the subject of a new documentary called Bush's Brain, based on a book by the same name by the journalists James Moore and Wayne Slater. It examines what happened in South Carolina 4 years ago. In a few minutes, we'll be joined live in our studio by Wayne Slater. But here's an excerpt of Bush's Brain.
By the way, I don't know if you heard the results from him, but the landslide has started.
We begin tonight with a 2,000 vote in New Hampshire. John McCain scored a solid victory over fellow Republican George W. Bush.
After New Hampshire, a victory in South Carolina promised to seal the Republican nomination for John McCain.
We had a candidate that didn't need coaching and wouldn't take coaching on issue development. We believed completely in his philosophy and where he wanted to take not only the party, but more importantly, the country. And it became a crusade for him. Not just for the staff, but for the volunteers. It's the proudest thing I've ever been involved in, quite frankly.
Remember the South Carolina primary after McCain had unexpectedly upended Bush in New Hampshire, and it was time to get real serious and real nasty.
Well, there was a lot of third-party negative stuff on McCain. I mean, even in a way attacking him, his military service, which was a distinguished military service. And I knew it was coming because I know how Carl works, and I think he was trying to hit the hot button with John McCain, and he did.
No one that I know, no political reporter who's covered races all the way back to 1960 has ever seen anything like that primary as far as the nastiness, the things that were said about Senator McCain and his family. It was akin to 1,000 tomahawks coming at you, and you might be able to fend off 2, 3, 4, or 5 of them. It was unbelievable, really.
Actually, one of the most interesting ones was the McCain is a little mental one. This is a very gentle whispering campaign, and it started in Washington. And people would say, you know, poor John, he had a very tough war, and he was a prisoner for a long time, and he really, you know, his temper is very bad, and he's blah, 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 blah. And there was this little buzz.
Bush, however, says he's not responsible for those ads.
For any group that decides to put money up on TV, they need to let us know something about their group and who their treasurer is, for example. But no, I had no coordination with them whatsoever.
There are a couple of them that sort of went below the radar in South Carolina. One is the unattributed flyer that appears under the windshields of cars in parking lots of fundamentalist churches, usually on the Sunday before the election, alleging something really unappetizing about whoever Rove's candidate is running against. And then the other is a citizen's phone call to a call-in radio talk show about John McCain having a black love child. And suddenly there will be, to every station, most remarkably, a similar-sounding assertion. Well, I hear that so-and-so.
One rich irony. John and Cindy had adopted a beautiful daughter from an orphanage that Mother Teresa had run in Bangladesh. Very honorable thing. You would think the Right to Life community would embrace that. Unfortunately, that didn't appear to be the case because of her skin color. And so thousands of calls to people about Senator McCain having I'll use the term black daughter. Maybe the daughter came from a black prostitute, etc. Leaflets passed out about Cindy McCain's drug addiction, which was well publicized. How she handled it was very honorable.
Do not let the Bush campaign and their cronies hijack this election with negative ads and $2.5 million of their dirty money.
All the flower of the political press corps was over there covering that primary, and none of them, as far as I could tell, could figure out what was going on. But if you'd ever covered a Rove campaign in East Texas, it was just textbook. It was just textbook.
You know, we didn't spend a lot of time trying to pursue. We had to move on to the next primary state. Who made what decision? I believe I know where those decisions were made. They were made at the top of a campaign. And a campaign sets the tone. And even if they didn't make the decisions, they could stop them. And they chose not to. But ultimately, I do believe all campaigns ultimately reflect either the candidate or the person who's running the campaign, their character. And I think it certainly did that.
Paul Weaver in the new documentary Bush's Brain, based on a book by the same title by authors James Moore and Wayne Slater. When we come back from break, we speak with author Wayne Slater here in our studio, and then we'll look at Bush's War on Women, Laura Flanders joins us. Stay with us. John Fahey here on Democracy Now!, Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency, The Battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman. So we broadcast in the largest public media collaboration in the country on over 240 radio and television stations, Pacifica stations, NPR stations, public access TV stations, PBS, and both satellite networks, on Dish Network's Free Speech TV, Channel 9415, and on DirecTV, Channel 375, Link TV. We are joined by Wayne Slater. He's co-author of the book Bush's Brain. The documentary we just heard an excerpt of is based on that book. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Wayne.
Great to be with you.
Well, tell us more about the attack on McCain 4 years ago and what it was like for you to look at him last night at the convention giving his endorsement to President Bush.
It was remarkable. I was covering the Bush campaign in 2000, and I remember leaving New Hampshire, Bush lost to McCain, and being in a restaurant in the morning with Karen Hughes, who's an advisor to President Bush, and she was worried, I think, for the first time that their campaign, the Bush campaign, was in trouble. And what we then saw in the next few days in South Carolina was extraordinary. This attack on John McCain.
Let's explain South Carolina. Okay. New Hampshire happened and McCain won. Bush came in second. So then the primaries, South Carolina. Bush is behind.
Absolutely, he's behind, and the campaign is worried that, wait a minute, this McCain juggernaut may be real. So what we first saw was the emergence of this suspect veterans group that stood up on the stairs and basically raised questions about McCain's abilities. It said, does he have the temperament to be president? That's code for he was a POW, so he may be crazy. Well, where did this suspect veterans group come from? Then, as we approached the primary, a series of dirty tricks happened. And we reporters who were there, just as Molly Ivins said in the clip we saw, we were watching this event where phone calls were being made by Bush allies, raising questions about possibly a McCain love child, questions about McCain's wife, whether she had used illegal drugs, prescription drugs, and abused them. All kinds of things really aimed at winning over Republican primary supporters, and they worked. After that, the relationship between Bush and McCain was bitter and vicious. At one point in a studio in South Carolina, right before the primary, McCain and Bush were standing beside each other. And Bush said, you know, let's shake hands. That's okay, George. It's just politics. McCain said, George, not everything's politics. And after that, the relationship is extraordinary. Last night, you saw him praising the man. As I said, it's like two parallel universes.
In fact, a few months ago, we watched Bush and McCain arms around each other, and Bush kissed the head of John McCain.
You can only, it's one of those moments, could I be in the brain of John McCain to know, my God, just don't touch me? You know that's what he was thinking. But apparently, and this is one of the mysteries of this campaign, apparently he is an extraordinarily good Republican soldier who's standing up despite his animus, despite his continued antipathy, really, for Bush and his political operative, Karl Rove. He is standing up with the party and last night praising the president in a way I'm not sure I could.
We were just watching and listening to Bush's Brain, the excerpt of the documentary. Molly Ivins was in it. So was a man named Paul Weaver. Mm-hmm. Who is he?
Extraordinary story, and very briefly, years ago in 1980s, about the mid-80s, late-80s.
Because he was there last night.
Yeah, I saw John right after the speech. He was exhilarated, thought John McCain had done a good job. He's working for John McCain and for Democrats, the Trial Lawyer Association and others. The reason he's working for Democrats and only McCain is because he can't get a job otherwise. Karl Rove has effectively destroyed him in his ability to get work. He was one of the shining lights in the Republican Party in Texas back in the 80s. There were two of them. Young Karl Rove, young John Weaver. For reasons that are complicated, but reasons that laid themselves out over the years that followed, John Weaver found himself on the wrong side of Karl Rove. And Rove's M.O. is not simply to defeat someone, but to destroy them. If you're not on my side, you are against me. And over the years, he has basically damaged Weaver, has denied him any kind of clients in the Republican Party as Rove has ascended to power and with George Bush as his candidate. And so Weaver's only opportunity really was to attach himself to John McCain. It was a sort of Greek drama 4 years ago where you had McCain and the man who was the enemy of Karl Rove, the president's advisor on one side, and Karl Rove, this arguably evil force and brain of George Bush on the other. In the end, again, George Bush won and Karl Rove was triumphant.
Karl Rove is also now one of the people who, I don't know if it's fair to say target of an investigation, yeah, but who is being questioned about the outing of a CIA operative, Valerie Plame, the wife of former ambassador to Iraq, who had exposed that the Bush administration, that President Bush saying that, you know, Saddam Hussein trying to get uranium from Africa was not true, Joe Wilson. What about Karl Rove now and how he deals with both this investigation and also this reelection campaign?
There's something, I guess, in Texas we call the mark of Rove, and it's essentially this. In any campaign or any operation he's involved in, there are a couple of things that are the same. One is your opponent is targeted at the strength, not the weakness. The tradition is that you attack and exploit the weakness of an opponent. That's never been Rove's style. He's always gone after the strength of your opponent. Secondly, he never leaves any fingerprints. Very often these attacks are third-person attacks. They come a different way. So when we saw this basic outing of a CIA agent married to what turned out to be an opponent of George Bush, someone who was offering information that was contrary to the Bush party line, then the first thing I thought, and I think an awful lot of people thought, was, gosh, that sure is similar to the pattern we've seen not simply once or twice, but for almost two decades involving Karl Rove.
I mean, it really is audacious to get involved in war record issues with John Kerry because of the vulnerability of George Bush on this issue. In fact, a Texas legislator that just recently saying he was involved in getting the sons of rich men into the National Guard so they could avoid service in Vietnam.
Yeah, and all of us who were there in that period know that that's the kind of thing that was happening. You're right. The former lieutenant governor, not just a legislator, but a powerful figure in Texas politics then said, I'm sorry, this was a mistake. This was a guy who knew Lyndon Johnson, was a protege of Lyndon Johnson, and said, I was involved in getting George Bush in the National Guard.
This hasn't gotten much play.
No, it hasn't, but it's out there. The video's out there, and you wonder. I think a lot of us knew that this was a possibility, but it's out there now.
So you have George Bush, this issue of his service or lack of service at the time, and he takes on this issue.
I think the interesting thing here is as various people debate the specifics of the Swift Boat for Truth veteran controversy, these guys who basically have tried to challenge John Kerry's record, is that it's consistent. Whatever the details are, whether somebody was shooting one night or whether the moon was up or the moon was down in Vietnam in 1968 and 69, what's really indisputable is this long pattern of activity in which opponents of George Bush and Karl Rove, the president's political consultant, are find themselves on the other side of attacks. And you're right, it's audacious. It's amazing that the Bush campaign or Bush allies would allow themselves, with the vulnerability on Vietnam, to nevertheless be involved in attacking a man at his strength, Vietnam.
What does the former Speaker of the Texas House, Ben Barnes, who is the man who said that he helped President George Bush and sons of other rich families avoid Vietnam by going into the Texas National Guard, what does he gain by saying this now?
Well, he doesn't, and I wonder. He's actually a lobbyist now and has some corporate clients, of all things, and so I think he's probably nervous. I've talked to Ben a number of times in 2000, and recently I saw him in Boston. He really doesn't have much to gain. He actually is supporting a Republican, a moderate Republican in Texas, who happens to be the mother of the president's press secretary, Scott McClellan, in her political race. And so, unlike the attack by the Bush administration that he is simply a partisan operative, they can't dismiss him that simply. He really has very little to gain here. And I think the fact that many of us talked to him 4 years ago and he was reluctant to talk about what we suspected he's now saying was part of a feeling that he wasn't ready. He was afraid that this might hurt his career, this might hurt him in some way, that Karl Rove is a guy who can come after him. What I understand is that he is actually sort of having a searching his soul now, and I know it sounds corny, but I understand from people who know Ben that in the last few months, he's really come to terms, as we all grow older, with what he did. He helped the sons of rich Texans get special spots and avoid service in Vietnam while many other young men died. Now he sees himself in a position that one of those sons is the president of the United States, involved in a campaign attacking a man who truly was in Vietnam.
Senator Max Cleland also served in Vietnam and became a triple amputee as a result of his injuries. He has become a staunch supporter of Senator John Kerry, going out on the road and just went to the Crawford Ranch to deliver a letter to attack President Bush for attacking the record of John Kerry, although he says he's not doing it. He says he has nothing to do with the veterans group that's doing it. What about what happened to Max Cleland? Well, his race for Senate in Georgia.
I mean, you absolutely have it. Despite all the denials, despite all the assurances there are no fingerprints, the Bush campaign is not involved in any of these attacks. Look at what's happened. Max Cleland, his absolute strength was he was a patriot, a veteran of Vietnam War, who sacrificed three limbs for that service and came back. When he ran for re-election in 2002, a campaign that Karl Rove, who had an office at that point in the White House, was involved in orchestrating. He was very active in the effort to win various Republican seats in the Senate, including that one in Georgia. Max Cleland, was attacked. He was attacked on the basis of his strength, his service in Vietnam. Ads came up questioning whether he was associated, whether he was weak, whether he was unpatriotic, whether he truly had Vietnam honor. There was a commercial that had a picture of Max Cleland and Saddam Hussein that played in Georgia, played very well.
And Osama bin Laden.
And Osama bin Laden had a picture with the two of them beside each other. Extraordinary attack. But look at what's happened. The attack on Kerry, his strength, Vietnam service. Cleland in 2002, his strength, his Vietnam service. And those of us in Texas go back to 1994. And the Richards campaign, when George Bush, with Karl Rove at the helm, targeted Ann Richards for defeat, and they were successful. One of the most significant moments, which we wrote about in that campaign but didn't receive that much publicity, was a whisper campaign, a virulent whisper campaign in East Texas, a conservative area, and really attacking Ann Richards at her strength. Ann Richards' strength as a governor was that she was tolerant, she was inclusive, she created the most diverse administration with women and men and minorities and gays and lesbians and others in her administration. What was the whisper campaign in East Texas, which ultimately emerged with one Bush operative talking publicly a few weeks before the campaign? Ann Richards is too close to the lesbians and homosexuals. It worked in East Texas. Again, the pattern, attack the strength of your opponent. And it's a pattern that we saw in 94 in Texas, and we see today with John Kerry. The Bush allies can deny that the Bush campaign has anything to do with these most recent attacks, But it's indisputable when you see this pattern of activity, it happens again and again.
Wayne Slater, I want to thank you very much for being with us, senior political writer for the Dallas Morning News and co-author of the book Bush's Brain, How Karl Rove Made George W. Bush Look Presidential. Well, John McCain drew the biggest response of the evening last night, not for his comments about President Bush or the war in Iraq, but when he referred to filmmaker Michael Moore, who was sitting in a press box at the convention as a credentialed USA Today columnist.
Our choice wasn't between a benign status quo and the bloodshed of war. It was between war and a graver threat. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Not our political opponents, and certainly not a disingenuous filmmaker who would have us believe so good, I'll use it again. Certainly not a disingenuous filmmaker. Who would have us believe, my friends, who would have us believe that Saddam's Iraq was an oasis of peace, when in fact, it was a place of indescribable cruelty, torture chambers, mass graves, and prisons that destroyed the lives of the small children inside their walls.
Senator John McCain last night on the floor of the convention referring to Michael Moore. His latest film, Fahrenheit 9/11, is the most successful documentary in film history and has been seen by millions. It examines President Bush's actions before and after the September 11th attacks, including his ties to prominent Saudis, including the family of Osama bin Laden. Last night at Madison Square Garden, as the delegates were leaving, streaming out after the speech of former Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, I asked them for their reaction.
Hi, are you a delegate? Pardon? Are you a delegate?
Yes, I'm an alternate.
Okay, well, and you're a delegate. Where are you from? I'd like to ask all three of you.
I'm from Alaska.
From Alaska? And Wisconsin?
Wisconsin.
So what did you think of tonight?
I thought it was wonderful.
Senator McCain raised Fahrenheit 9/11 and Michael Moore. Did you see the film?
No, I probably wouldn't see it.
Why?
I don't endorse that kind of a movie.
Which is what? What kind?
I would look more to something more that had more of a quality moral value to it. Something that would be bringing the country up, not tearing it down.
What is the most important issue to you as a Republican?
I think sanctity of life and family and moral values, good quality moral values, truth-telling, integrity.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And your name and where you're from?
Charlotte Rowe. Rasmussen. I'm from Stanley, Wisconsin.
And what was your reaction to the opening night of the Republican convention?
It was very uplifting, and I really enjoyed John McCain and Rudy Giuliani and all the speakers.
Have you seen Fahrenheit 9/11?
No, I haven't. I've only heard media reports about it, so.
Do you have any desire to?
No, I don't think I'd go to see it.
What is the most important issue to you as a Republican?
The war on terrorism, the continued strong defense of our country. Most important issue to me.
And do you think there is a connection between Iraq and 9/11?
Absolutely, absolutely.
What is that connection?
That he's probably been the host for a lot of terrorists coming through his country. And like Rudy said tonight, he is a terrorist, what he did to his people in his country. So I'm very supportive of President Bush's war on terrorism, and including the part of in Iraq.
And your name, where you're
My
from?
My name is Sandy Ermeling. I'm from Wausau, Wisconsin.
And your reaction to tonight?
It was wonderful. Both John McCain and Giuliani, they telling America what it's all about, what this country is all about, and where we will go with President Bush.
What makes you a Republican?
I've been a Republican. I was raised Republican. And I look at the philosophy. I evaluated the philosophy of both parties when I became an adult. And I decided the Republican Party was for me.
What's the most important issue to you?
The most important issue is morals.
Specifically.
I have grandchildren, and I think I want them to grow up in a country like I grew up in as a child, not like it's been the last 10 years. And President Bush is doing a terrific job trying to turn things around.
What did you think of the protests outside this week?
I just ignored it because everywhere we go, whether it's in Wisconsin, there are protesters. We don't do it. We take the high ground, and I just ignore it.
Have you
put a voice there? That's all about living in America, that you're able to do these things.
Have you seen Fahrenheit 9/11?
I wouldn't waste my money on it.
Why?
Because of his other movie about Columbine, I didn't believe that movie. My daughter saw it. She said, Mother, you have to see this ridiculous movie. And I don't like Michael Moore. He's from Michigan. He's from the Midwest. And I thought he probably was a Californian. I was really surprised to hear he was from the Midwest.
Why?
I have that type of an attitude like he has. I mean, years ago, someone like Michael Moore would be tried for treason about the terrible things that he has done and said about our country.
Like what?
Well, all lies. I mean, we have a military over in Iraq, and he doesn't agree with our president, and we should be supporting the situation in Iraq instead of talking about it and ridiculing it. As a true American.
In the film, he interviews a woman who lost her son in Iraq, and the idea that to support the troops is to bring them home.
Uh-huh.
What's your reaction to that?
To support the troops is to bring them home. Well, I think I think you have to ask the troops that. The people that are serving over in Iraq they want to be there. And we have a headquarters, and we have people that come and volunteer to do telephone calling for George Bush because they have sons in Iraq. And they want to help, and they're very proud of the president. And they feel very secure with our president. And these are mothers. And these are mothers in Wausau, Wisconsin.
Some delegates at the Republican National Convention last night. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, we go outside the convention to the protests. And then we'll talk about another event outside the convention at the Waldorf Astoria. 900 women gathered to hear Lynn Cheney and Barbara Bush. Stay with us.
The union is behind us. We shall not be moved. The union is behind us. We shall not be moved, just like a tree that's standing by the
We shall not be moved. We
We will stand and fight together.
We shall not be moved.
We will stand and fight together.
We shall not be moved, just like a tree that's standing by the
Pete Seeger and friends, We Shall Not Be Moved, here on Democracy Now!, Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency, The Battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman. As the Republican National Convention builds towards George W. Bush's acceptance speech on Thursday night, the streets of New York continued to be filled with police and protesters. So far, more than 600 arrests have been made. Yesterday, there were two main marches, both organized by groups representing the poor and disenfranchised. The Kensington Welfare Rights Union held an unpermitted march, which went on for several hours before ending in police dividing the marchers and arresting some of the demonstrators. Earlier in the day, the Still We Rise Coalition led an unpermitted march from Union Square to the heavily fortified and barricaded Madison Square Garden, where the Republican convention was just kicking off. Filmmaker Rick Rowley of Big Noise Tactical Media was on the march and filed this report.
They marched for a range of causes under the shared banner of resistance to a political system they say marginalizes poor communities and communities of color. While their protest came on the first day of the Republican National Convention, their anger was not only directed at George W. Bush. They marched against the agendas of both major political parties. The protesters were a mix of young people from urban or immigrant communities. They were working families and the economically disenfranchised.
And this is a special day in which poverty comes to the White House, comes to the Republicans, that poor working people are taken to the streets. Comprise the Still We Rise Coalition. And quite frankly, you know, these are the communities that live the repression every day, right? So this is not, of course, they're used to this, and today they're going to say, ya basta, this is enough, and these issues have to come out to light.
Still We Rise. You can't hold us down. Can't hold us down. You can take everything away from us because you can't hold us down, because this is a poor people's march. You know, and we represent New York City.
The march was spirited and colorful. The demonstrators danced, sang, and chanted their way through the streets. While the war in Iraq is prominent on the minds of many protesters, many at yesterday's rally spoke of what they see as the war at home.
My name is Savita Parker, and I'm marching with Mothers on the Move because I believe that we should have education money, not for jails. I believe we should have housing, affordable housing for everyone. I believe that we should have criminal justice rights. And I believe that Bush needs to know that we're not happy with what he's doing and he must go.
Homelessness has escalated for the last two decades. Whether the donkey's in or the elephant is in, the masses are losing. This is a government by the people, not the elite. By the people, not banking interests. By the people, not the oil industry. The people have come to take back their government.
That piece produced by Rick Rowley of Big Noise Tactical Media for Democracy Now! And for all our protest coverage, you can go to our website at www.democracynow.org. As we turn now to another event outside the Republican National Convention at Madison Square Garden, no, it wasn't in the streets, but in one of the fanciest collection of suites. That's right, the Waldorf Astoria. President Bush's support frequently cite the number of women in his cabinet as proof of his support for women's rights. But numerous women's groups this week have held protests against the Bush agenda and what they call the war on women. In response, a group of 900 Republican women gathered Monday at the Waldorf Astoria to hear about why women should rally behind George W. Bush. The W Stands for Women event featured members of both the Bush and Cheney families, including the Bush twins, Jenna and Barbara, Barbara, who sat silently on stage, the president's sister, Doro Bush Koch, and mother, 76-year-old former First Lady Barbara Bush, as well as Dick Cheney's wife, Lynn, and daughter, Liz. This is an excerpt of what the former First Lady Barbara Bush had to say.
I must tell you that being around so many supporters like this renews my faith. I've tried to avoid watching the news lately because it does raise my blood pressure. Unfortunately, the president's father can't resist. He hates to miss a word. So while he spends his evening cursing at the TV set and occasionally even throwing things, I calmly sit by, needlepointing and listening to books on tape. I don't need to hear all that stuff. I can look at you and get great strength. Now, all of you mothers know what it's like when someone says mean things about someone you love. Imagine what it's like when these terrible, untrue things are said on national TV for the whole world to hear. Sometimes I just want to give people a piece of my mind. But of course, you know I would never do that. As George would say, wouldn't be prudent.
Barbara Bush, former First Lady and mother of the current president, speaking last night at the W Stands for Women event in New York. Also in attendance was Vice President Dick Cheney's wife, Lynn Cheney, who took the stage minutes later.
It's such an honor to be here today. Looking at the women sitting on this stage, I mean, it is so remarkable. The stories of women's advancement. I can remember when Dick and I first came to Washington, and it was a rarity to spot a woman cabinet officer. It was a rarity. Maybe it didn't even happen that women rose to high-level policy positions within the White House. I think that took longer to happen than women being in the cabinet. So this is such a wonderful moment to look back here and to see all of these women of high achievement working for George W. Bush. And it is always an honor for me to be any place that Barbara Bush is. I can remember how much I admired her when she was First Lady and Dick was Secretary of Defense. And one of my favorite pictures, and you don't even know this, is when you had cabinet wives come over. And, well, it was just this wonderful picture of you greeting me and being warm as you always are. And I love that picture. And thank you for everything you've done. And Doro, what a great sister. You and you've been a good friend to Liz and me, too, and we appreciate that. And it really is terrific to see Jenna and Barbara out here. Thank you for being here today. You know, one of the things that's happened to me over the last 3 years is I will have people come up to me and they say the same thing. It's in different versions of it, but basically it's something like this. We are so glad that George Bush and your husband are in the White House. And I know exactly what they mean. We live in times of peril. There is no question about that. These are times of great challenge for the American people. And it is such a comfort to all of us to have these good men who are so solid, so stable, so strong leading our country.
Lynn Cheney, wife of Vice President Dick Cheney, former head of the National Endowment of Humanities, speaking yesterday at W Stands for Women event at the Waldorf Astoria. We're now joined by radio talk show host and author Laura Flanders. She has written several books, one of them Bush Women, Tales of a Cynical Species, and the latest editor of The W Effect, Bush's War on Women. She's also host of Your Call, heard on KLW-FM in San Francisco, and a host on Air America. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Glad to be with you, Amy.
So, Lynn Cheney, Barbara Bush, you write extensively about them.
Yeah, I mean, these are two people who have been front and center of the Bush W Stands for Women campaign this time around, and also in 2000. This is a long-term campaign to try to mobilize women voters. Yesterday at the Waldorf, as you said, not in the streets but in the suites, they were gathered, and you would think that the point was to kind of give people the fuel to go out and campaign. I thought it was a little weak on the facts and the statistics. Even the people there, the women delegates, were complaining as they were coming out. I would have liked to have heard more that we could use in the way of facts and statistics about what this administration has done. Well, obviously, you know, the Barbara Bush quote brings it all home. I mean, this is a woman from a family who models disdain for facts and reality. She wants to be doing her needlepoint, she says, instead of paying attention to the news. And she really counts on the people of America, I think, to show the same kind of lack of interest in what's really going on. What was shocking to me yesterday was that there on the stage were the cabinet secretaries I write about, Ann Veneman, Gail Norton, you had Elaine Chao, people who are long-term activists, ideologues, who are overhauling this nation's laws and regulations to serve their masters. Lynn Cheney, a former board member of the Lockheed Martin Corporation, of course, somebody with a very strong right-wing record, one of the big leaders of the campaign against diversity and inclusion in the curriculum. This is an administration that likes to say it appoints women because, well, it doesn't believe in affirmative action. It's not just because of their gender or their race. It's because of their credentials and their intelligence and their, you know, smarts for the job. This event yesterday became a kind of grandmother contest. The substance of the biggest substance was, who is the grandmother of America? Is it Lynn Cheney or is it Barbara Bush? It was a very, very kind of pathetic display. One of the things that was that is interesting and that's important for people to realize is that women will decide this election. And the Republican Party is very aware of it. The majority of the so-called undecideds, that tiny, slim 5 million persuadables that everybody is focusing on, the majority of them are women. And they're moderate voters, hence the moderate display at this convention and the moderate language that you're hearing this week on the convention floor. The reality is very different, of course, of what this party platform is and what its record has been thus far.
Tonight, Laura Bush will speak. Lynn Cheney will also be
Lynn Cheney will also speak
this week.
And just one more thing. One of the things they're emphasizing, and I suspect they'll emphasize tonight, is the liberation of women in Afghanistan and the participation of the Iraqi soccer team in the Olympics. No matter how many times the soccer team of Iraq say if they were home, they'd be members of the resistance. Nonetheless, they simply cannot get out of this rhetorical kind of loop here. When we're talking about Afghan women, people listening to the speeches tonight need to remember that how much money was there allocated in the 2004 budget from this administration for the Women's Department in Afghanistan? Not one cent. It was only when women's organizations made a fuss that any money came from this administration to go to the Women's Department in Afghanistan.
In fact,
so that claim is simply a lie.
Wasn't Laura Bush the first first lady to do the presidential radio address on Saturday, and I remember listening to it as she talked about the liberation of Afghan women?
Well, absolutely, and the timing was brilliant, and it shows the role of women in this administration. If you remember, Bush came out very strong after 9/11. The beginning of the war on Afghanistan was all about smoke them out, shoot them out, bring them home dead or alive. That wasn't going so well by November. By November, the war was going badly. The Air Force was deciding to use the daisy cutter bombs, the biggest in our arsenal. You have to drop them out of a cargo plane. They destroy everything in a 3-mile radius. Who do they bring out onto the television to cast this war, not as a war of revenge, the most powerful nation in the world against one of the world's most underdeveloped states? They bring out Laura Bush to say, this isn't about revenge, this is about protection, defense, not just of Afghan women and girls, but of women and girls in the world. And she said, women and girls in the world are threatened by the Taliban, and we are coming to liberate them. Afghan women haven't been liberated. They have been denied the support they were promised. promised, but Laura Bush will be used again to put a soft face and a kind of feminist-friendly face on a devastating bombing campaign and an abandonment of women who were counting on them for support.
Laura Flanders, thanks for being with us, author of Bush Women, Tales of a Cynical Species, and her latest book, editor of The W Effect, Bush's War on Women. You can hear on KOW-FM, Public Radio, and on Air America and AirAmerica.com. Thanks for being with us. That does it for the show. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkaddous, Anna Nagara, Elizabeth Press, John Hamilton, Jeremy Scahill, Alpa Patel, Nell Geiser. Thank you so much to all the folks who make this happen, Mike DeFilippo as well. Our website is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.